Way back when I was in seminary, McCormick Seminary in Chicago, one of the things they did for us there was assign us a pastor out in the community to be our mentor. And it was their way of trying to give us some real world experience. We were had to have this advisor who was out in the church and would help us students become better pastors. And I was assigned to a black pastor in the city of Chicago. He was probably 60, 70 years old, still pastoring a church on the south side of Chicago, Reverend Smith. And I would meet with him maybe every other week, and we would talk about things. I would share what was going on in the church, and I kept waiting for him to advise me. You know, like I'd ask him, should I take, more Bible classes, or should I take maybe more church administration classes? And he wouldn't tell me. I'd ask him, where should I do my field placement in a church? And he would say, you decide. What he did do is tell stories. And in that way, I realized he was advising me. And one of the stories he told, I still remember to this day, I'm going to share it with you. It was about when he was a very brand new minister out in the world, serving a church, and he went to visit one of the older members of that church, an elderly man who was in the hospital battling cancer. Reverend Smith went to visit this man and sat with him for a long time, and he talked about all sorts of things with this man with cancer, and talked about how God loved him and read Bible verses to him, and talked about the meaning of suffering, all these things with this elderly man. And after spending about an hour with him, he said, I need to go now. And he got up to leave, Reverend Smith did, but the elderly man said, before you go, could I say a prayer for you? So Reverend Smith sat back down. It was unusual, he thought, the member of the church to be saying a prayer for him, but he bowed his head, and the old man began to pray, and he said, Lord, I thank you that you have called this young man into ministry. Ask that you bless him with all the gifts as he may need in his ministry. And Lord, I thank you brought him here to me so that he could be with me here in my sickness. As I sit in the hospital, Lord, thank you so much. And Lord, he speaks such eloquent words. I thank you for all the words that you have given to him this morning. And Lord, one more thing. If you could only help him, Lord, if you could only help him learn to shut up. Amen. Reverend Smith got the message, and so did I. Sometimes we say too much. The story that from the book of Job that John read this morning is another case where we might learn what to say and what not to say. In our passage of Job this morning, three friends go visit Job and sit with him for 7 days and say nothing. Book of Job is one of those wonderful books of the Old Testament. It's considered some of the finest literature around, in or out of the Bible. It sits in the Old Testament right before the book of Psalms. It's considered part of the wisdom books of the Bible. Job, Psalms, Proverbs are part of that. The story of Job, let me give you just a quick rundown that sets the stage for the passage that John read this morning. Job is like a parable, really. It is a story told by an unnamed author to discuss the problem of suffering in the world. And what makes it so astounding is that our author does not give in to any easy answers. He makes Job struggle to understand what his suffering is all about, and thus he makes us struggle as well. Now, this book of Job begins that Job is got the perfect life. He is a very successful farmer, rancher, businessman. He's got a wonderful wife and a wonderful family. And on top of that, he is the most faithful person anybody knows. And his life is just great. But then some bad things begin to happen to him. First, all his robbers come in and attack him and they kill his servants and many of his cattle. And the ones that survive that, a storm comes in, kills the rest of the cattle, and his children are killed as well. It is not a pretty story. And then on top of that, he gets a disease, and he's covered with sores all over his body, and he's in great pain. It gets to be so bad that Job leaves his home and goes and sits on the ash heap, the garbage dump, if you will, and laments his situation. And that leads us up to the point where John's passage gathers us. Now you got to see Job as a parable, and all these bad things are like bad to the extreme. All that could possibly happen to him, short of him dying, has happened to him. And he has to struggle with it. Now, again, it's more than any of us would ever experience at once, I hope. But there's a reality in that story, isn't there? Because all of us suffer at some time. And sometimes we suffer so much that it feels like everything is crashing down upon us. And that's exactly how Job felt. It is something we can relate to. Terrible things happen, and we have to learn how to deal with it. And not only do terrible things happen to us, but they happen to the people we know and the people we love, and we need to learn to deal with that as well. What happens in the book of Job is Job has three friends, and it says they came to visit him at the ash heap. They went to where he was, and they sit down in the ash heap with him. And they sit there with him for 7 days and seven nights, and they don't say a word. They don't say a word. There's a practice in the Jewish faith that's called holding Shiva, where for the 7 days after a loved one dies, family and friends, our friends, go sit with the family as in their time of mourning. The author, Ann Brenner, a Jewish author, in her book Mourning and Mitzvah, describes the Shiva as, in her words, the community embrace. She writes, in those early days of grief, the senses are dulled, the mind is numb, the emotions raw. The role of others, friends, family, and the faith community is to provide a safe environment for the mourner to regain his or her footing in the world. These friends are present with the mourner, offering hope, meals, and care, while allowing the grieving person to move through their initial stages of grief and pain. And that is exactly what these three friends do with Job. They go and sit with him, give him an embrace, so that he can begin to deal with his pain, his grief, his suffering. And they do it in silence, not a word spoken. That would be the most difficult part for me, wouldn't it? Maybe for many of us, to not say anything, but to just sit there. And yet that's what they do. You know, there's a tendency in us when we're dealing with someone who is suffering in some way is to say something. There's got to be something we can say. Well, we fall back on cliches, right? You'll be stronger for it. Okay? He's in a better place now. He's with God in heaven. sayings like that, you know, sayings that sound good but don't really touch the grieving person where they're living. They're cliches. Look at all you still have left. You'll just have to get used to a new lifestyle. I had been asked once when I was a chaplain, I had been asked by the staff of the hospital to come down to the emergency waiting room. There was a person there whose husband had died suddenly, and they asked me if I could come down and help comfort her. When I got down there, I saw that a friend was there speaking to her, and the friend kept saying, "Don't cry, don't cry. He's in a better place. Don't cry, don't cry." And I could see that the woman whose husband had died, she wanted to cry. So I went up to her and said, "You know, the Bible tells us that when Lazarus died, Jesus wept." And that gave her permission. If Jesus could cry at somebody's death, she could cry at her husband's death. But that's how it is, isn't it? We don't know the right things to say. Christian author Paul Scherer tells of a woman whose son died in war. A devout and faithful woman, she found her faith challenged by the words of her friends. The woman said, "They tried to tell me that I must take it patiently. I must see it through, that there will be some kind of dawn if I wait for it. But they can't show me anything that seems worth waiting for. They say I can be thankful he died a hero and not a criminal. But he died, didn't he? They want me to believe I'll be a stronger woman for it, but did he have to die for me to be stronger?" As you can hear in the words of this woman, she was deep in grief. The well-meaning words of her friend were of no help to her. It's not that the issues raised by the friends aren't important. They are. Why the young man had to die and what meaning did his death have and his life have are important issues. Important questions for this mother that eventually she'll seek answers to. But for these friends, the timing was off. What the grieving person first needs is comfort. June Sarah's Kolff, in her book, How Can I Help?, writes, "Grieving people will not remember the words spoken, but they will remember who stayed near them in the early stage days of grieving." That's exactly what Job's friends did. They went to be with him in his early stages of grieving and sat with him in silence for 7 days and seven nights. Now, if we were to keep reading in the book of Job, and I certainly encourage you to do it, you will find after those 7 days and seven nights, the friends each in turn begin to speak. They spoke words that Job did not find to be all that helpful as they tried to work out a theology of suffering. And Job wasn't buying it, but he listened to them because they had sat with him for 7 days. They had earned the right, even if Job had trouble agreeing with them. I hope the message to you comes through that when we're dealing with folks who have had some sort of tough time, whether it's a death of a family member, whether it's a illness, very bad illness, whether it's work-related problem, maybe a job loss, all those things cause us to suffer, that we start with the point of going and just being present. Being present in person if we can, being present in calls and letters if we can't be there in person, being present in our prayers. being there for those grieving folks in their first few days and weeks of grieving.